The Longer Discourse on the Lion's Roar, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Ujjunya in the deer park at Kanakatala. Then the naked ascetic Kassapa went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he stood to one side and said to the Buddha, "Master Gotama, I have heard the following. The ascetic Gotama criticizes all forms of mortification. He categorically condemns and denounces those self-mortifiers who live rough. Do those who say this repeat what the Buddha has said, and not misrepresent him with an untruth? Is their explanation in line with the teaching? Are there any legitimate grounds for rebuke and criticism? For we don't want to misrepresent Master Gotama." Kassapa, "Those who say this do not repeat what I have said. They misrepresent me with what is false, baseless, and untrue. With clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, I see some self-mortifier who lives rough, reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But I see another self-mortifier who lives rough, reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. I see some self-mortifier who takes it easy, reborn in a place of loss. But I see another self-mortifier who takes it easy, reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. Since I truly understand the coming and going, passing away and rebirth of these self-mortifiers in this way, how could I criticize all forms of mortification or categorically condemn and denounce those self-mortifiers who live rough? There are some clever ascetics and Brahmins who are subtle, accomplished in the doctrines of others, hair splitters. You'd think they live to demolish convictions with their intellect. They agree with me in some matters and disagree in others. Some of the things that they applaud, I also applaud. Some of the things they don't applaud, I also don't applaud. But some of the things that they applaud, I don't applaud. And some of the things that they don't applaud, I do applaud. Some of the things that I applaud, others also applaud. Some of the things that I don't applaud, they also don't applaud. But some of the things that I don't applaud, others do applaud. And some of the things that I do applaud, others don't applaud. I go up to them and say, let us leave aside those matters on which we disagree, but there are some matters on which we agree. Regarding these, sensible people pursuing, pressing, and grilling would compare teacher with teacher or community with community. There are things that are unskillful, blameworthy, not to be cultivated, unworthy of the noble ones and dark, and are reckoned as such. Who behaves like they've totally given these things up? The ascetic Gotama or the teachers of other communities? It's possible that they might say, the ascetic Gotama behaves like he's totally given those unskillful things up, compared with the teachers of other communities, and that's how, when sensible people pursue the matter, they will mostly praise us. In addition, sensible people engaging, pressing, and grilling would compare teacher with teacher or community with community. There are things that are skillful, blameless, worth cultivating, worthy of the noble ones, and bright, and are reckoned as such. Who proceeds having totally undertaken these things? The ascetic Gotama or the teachers of other communities? It's possible that they might say, the ascetic Gotama proceeds having totally undertaken these things compared with the teachers of other communities, and that's how, when sensible people pursue the matter, they will mostly praise us. In addition, sensible people pursuing, pressing, and grilling would compare teacher with teacher or community with community. There are things that are unskillful, blameworthy, not to be cultivated, unworthy of the noble ones, and dark, and are reckoned as such. Who behaves like they've totally given these things up? The ascetic Gotama's disciples, or the disciples of other teachers? It's possible that they might say, the ascetic Gotama's disciples behave like they've totally given those unskillful things up, compared with the disciples of other teachers, and that's how, when sensible people pursue the matter, they will mostly praise us. In addition, sensible people pursuing, pressing, and grilling would compare teacher with teacher or community with community. There are things that are skillful, blameless, worth cultivating, worthy of the noble ones and bright, and are reckoned as such. Who proceeds having totally undertaken these things, the ascetic Gotama's disciples or the disciples of other teachers? It's possible that they might say, the ascetic Gotama's disciples proceed having totally undertaken those skillful things compared with the disciples of other teachers. And that's how, when sensible people pursue the matter, they will mostly praise us. There is, Kassapa, a path. There is a practice, practicing in accordance with which you will know and see for yourself. Only the ascetic Gotama's words are timely, true, and meaningful, in line with the teaching and training. And what is that path? It is simply this Noble Eightfold Path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. This is the path, this is the practice, practicing in accordance with which you will know and see for yourself. Only the ascetic Gotama's words are timely, true, and meaningful, in line with the teaching and training. When he had spoken, Kassapa said to the Buddha, Reverend Gotama, those ascetics and Brahmins consider these practices of self-mortification to be what makes someone a true ascetic or Brahmin. They go naked, ignoring conventions. They lick their hands and don't come or wait when asked. They don't consent to food brought to them or food prepared on purpose for them or an invitation for a meal. They don't receive anything from a pot or bowl or from someone who keeps sheep or who has a weapon or a shovel in their home or where a couple is eating or where there is a woman who is pregnant, breastfeeding, or who has a man in her home or where there is a dog waiting or flies buzzing. They accept no fish or meat or liquor or wine and drink no beer. They go to just one house for alms, taking just one mouthful, or two houses and two mouthfuls, up to seven houses and seven mouthfuls. They feed on one saucer a day, two saucers a day, up to seven saucers a day. They eat once a day, once every second day, up to once a week, and so on, even up to once a fortnight. They live committed to the practice of eating food at set intervals. Those ascetics and Brahmins also consider these practices of self-mortification to be what makes someone a true ascetic or Brahmin. They eat herbs, millet, wild rice, poor rice, water lettuce, rice bran, scum from boiling rice, sesame flour, grass or cow dung. They survive on forest roots and fruits, or eating fallen fruit. Those ascetics and Brahmins also consider these practices of mortification to be what makes someone a true ascetic or Brahmin. They wear robes of sun hemp, mixed hemp, corpse wrapping cloth, rags, lod tree bark, antelope hide, whole or in strips, kusa grass, bark, wood chips, human hair, horsetail hair, or owl's wings. They tear out hair and beard, committed to this practice. They constantly stand, refusing seats. They squat, committed to persisting in the squatting position. They lie on a mat of thorns, making a mat of thorns their bed. They make their bed on a plank or the bare ground. They lie only on one side. They wear dust and dirt. They stay in the open air. They sleep wherever they lay their mat. They eat unnatural things, committed to the practice of eating unnatural foods. They don't drink, committed to the practice of not drinking liquids. They're committed to the practice of immersion in water three times a day, including the evening. Kassapa, someone may practice all those forms of self-mortification, but if they haven't developed and realized any accomplishment in ethics, mind and wisdom, they are far from being a true ascetic or Brahmin. But take a mendicant who develops a heart of love, free of enmity and ill will, and they realize the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. When they achieve this, they're called a mendicant who is a true ascetic and also a true Brahmin. When he had spoken, Kassapa said to the Buddha, "It's hard, Master Gotama, to be a true ascetic or a true Brahmin." "It's typical, Kassapa, in this world to think that it's hard to be a true ascetic or Brahmin. But someone might practice all those forms of self-mortification, and if it was only because of just that much, only because of that self-mortification that it was so very hard to be a true ascetic or Brahmin, it wouldn't be appropriate to say that it's hard to be a true ascetic or Brahmin. For it would be quite possible for a householder, or a householder's child, or even the bonded maid who carries the water jar, to practice all those forms of self-mortification. It's because there's something other than just that much, something other than that self-mortification that it's so very hard to be a true ascetic or Brahmin. And that's why it's appropriate to say that it's hard to be a true ascetic or Brahmin. Take a mendicant who develops a heart of love, free of enmity and ill will, and they realize the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and live, having realized it with their own insight, due to the ending of defilements. When they achieve this, they're called a mendicant who is a true ascetic and also a true Brahmin. When he had spoken, Kassapa said to the Buddha, "It's hard, Master Gotama, to know a true ascetic or a true Brahmin. It's typical in this world to think that it's hard to know a true ascetic or Brahmin. But someone might practice all those forms of self-mortification, and if it was only by just that much, only by that self-mortification that it was so very hard to know a true ascetic or Brahmin, it wouldn't be appropriate to say that it's hard to know a true ascetic or Brahmin. For it would be quite possible for a householder, or a householder's child, or even the bonded maid who carries the water jar, to know that someone is practicing all those forms of self-mortification. It's because there's something other than just that much, something other than that self-mortification, that it's so very hard to know a true ascetic or Brahmin. And that's why it is appropriate to say that it's hard to know a true ascetic or Brahmin. Take a mendicant who develops a heart of love, free of enmity and ill will, and they realize the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. When they achieve this, they're called a mendicant who is a true ascetic and also a true Brahmin. When he had spoken, Kassapa said to the Buddha, "But Master Gotama, what is that accomplishment in ethics, in mind and in wisdom?" "It's when a realized one arises in the world, perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world, with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, gods and humans, and he makes it known to others. He teaches Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased. And he reveals a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. A householder hears that teaching, or a householder's child, or someone reborn in some clan. They gain faith in the realized one and reflect, 'Living in a house is cramped and dirty, but the life of one gone forth is wide open. It's not easy for someone living at home to lead the spiritual life utterly full and pure, like a polished shell. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness?' After some time, they give up a large or small fortune and a large or small family circle. They shave off hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness. Once they've gone forth, they live restrained in the monastic code, conducting themselves well and seeking alms in suitable places. Seeing danger in the slightest fault, they keep the rules they've undertaken. They act skillfully by body and speech. They're purified in livelihood and accomplished in ethical conduct. They guard the sense doors, have mindfulness and situational awareness, and are content. And how is a mendicant accomplished in ethics? It's when a mendicant gives up killing living creatures, renouncing the rod and the sword. They're scrupulous and kind, living full of compassion for all living beings. This pertains to their ethics. They give up stealing. They take only what's given and expect only what's given. They keep themselves clean by not thieving. This pertains to their ethics. They give up unchastity. They are celibate, set apart, avoiding the common practice of sex. This pertains to their ethics. They give up lying. They speak the truth and stick to the truth. They're honest and trustworthy and don't trick the world with their words. This pertains to their ethics. They give up divisive speech. They don't repeat in one place what they heard in another so as to divide people against each other. Instead, they reconcile those who are divided, supporting unity, delighting in harmony, loving harmony, speaking words that promote harmony. This pertains to their ethics. They give up harsh speech. They speak in a way that's mellow, pleasing to the ear, lovely, going to the heart, polite, likeable and agreeable to the people. This pertains to their ethics. They give up talking nonsense. Their words are timely, true and meaningful, in line with the teaching and training. They say things at the right time which are valuable, reasonable, succinct, and beneficial. This pertains to their ethics. They refrain from injuring plants and seeds. They eat in one part of the day, abstaining from eating at night and food at the wrong time. They avoid dancing, singing, music, and seeing shows. They refrain from beautifying and adorning themselves with garlands, fragrance, and makeup. They avoid high and luxurious beds. They avoid receiving gold and money, raw grains, raw meat, women and girls, male and female bond servants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants, cows, horses, and mares, and fields and land. They refrain from running errands and messages, buying and selling, falsifying weights, metals or measures, bribery, fraud, cheating and duplicity, mutilation, murder, abduction, banditry, plunder and violence. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in injuring plants and seeds. These include plants propagated from roots, stems, cuttings or joints, and those from regular seeds as the fifth. They refrain from such injury to plants and seeds. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in storing up goods for their own use. This includes such things as food, drink, clothes, vehicles, bedding, fragrance, and material possessions. They refrain from storing up such goods. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in seeing shows. This includes such things as dancing, singing, music, performances, and storytelling, clapping, gongs and kettle drums, art exhibitions and acrobatic displays, battles of elephants, horses, buffaloes, bulls, goats, rams, chickens and quails, staff fights, boxing and wrestling, combat, roll calls of the armed forces, battle formations and regimental reviews. They refrain from such shows. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in gambling that causes negligence. This includes such things as checkers, draughts, checkers in the air, hopscotch, spillikins, board games, tip-cat, drawing straws, dice, leaf flutes, toy ploughs, somersaults, pinwheels, toy measures, toy carts, toy bows, guessing words from syllables, and guessing another's thoughts. They refrain from such gambling. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still make use of high and luxurious bedding. This includes such things as sofas, couches, woolen covers, shag-piled, colourful, white, embroidered with flowers, quilted, embroidered with animals, double or single-fringed, and silk covers studded with gems, as well as silken sheets, woven carpets, rugs for elephants, horses or chariots, antelope hide rugs, and spreads of fine deer hide with a canopy above and red cushions at both ends. They refrain from such bedding. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in beautifying and adorning themselves with garlands, fragrance and makeup. This includes such things as applying beauty products by anointing, massaging, bathing and rubbing, mirrors, ointments, garlands, fragrances and makeup, face powder, foundation, bracelets, headbands, fancy walking sticks or containers, rapiers, parasols, fancy sandals, turbans, jewellery, chowries, and long-fringed white robes. They refrain from such beautification and adornment. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in unworthy talk. This includes such topics as talk about kings, bandits, and ministers, talk about armies, threats and wars, talk about food, drink, clothes and beds, talk about garlands and fragrances, talk about family, vehicles, villages, towns, cities and countries, talk about women and heroes, street talk and well talk, talk about the departed, motley talk, tales of land and sea, and talk about being reborn in this or that state of existence. They refrain from such unworthy talk. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in arguments. They say such things as, "You don't understand this teaching and training. I understand this teaching and training. What, you understand this teaching and training? You're practicing wrong. I'm practicing right. I stay on topic, you don't. You said last what you should have said first. You said first what you should have said last. What you thought so much about has been disproved. Your doctrine is refuted. Go on, save your doctrine. You're trapped. Get yourself out of this if you can." They refrain from such argumentative talk. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in running errands and messages. This includes running errands for rulers, ministers, aristocrats, Brahmins, householders or princes who say, "Go here, go there, take this, bring that from there." They refrain from such errands. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in deceit, flattery, hinting, and belittling, and using material possessions to pursue other material possessions. They refrain from such deceit and flattery. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes such fields as limb-reading, omenology, divining celestial portents, interpreting dreams, divining bodily marks, divining holes in cloth gnawed by mice, fire offerings, ladle offerings, offerings of husks, rice powder, rice, ghee, or oil, offerings from the mouth, blood sacrifices, palmistry, geomancy for building sites, fields and cemeteries, exorcisms, earth magic, snake charming, poisons, the crafts of the scorpion, the rat, the bird and the crow, prophesying lifespan, chanting for protection and animal cries. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes reading the marks of gems, cloth, clubs, swords, spears, arrows, weapons, women, men, boys, girls, male and female bondservants, elephants, horses, buffaloes, bulls, cows, goats, rams, chickens, quails, monitor lizards, rabbits, tortoises, or deer. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes making predictions that the king will march forth or march back, or that our king will attack and the enemy king will retreat, or vice versa, or that our king will triumph and the enemy king will be defeated, or vice versa. And so there will be victory for one and defeat for the other. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes making predictions that there will be an eclipse of the moon, or sun, or stars, that the sun, moon, and stars will be in conjunction or in opposition, that there will be a meteor shower, a fiery sky, an earthquake, thunder, that there will be a rising, a setting, a darkening, a brightening of the moon, sun, and stars. And it also includes making predictions about the results of all such phenomena. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes predicting whether there will be plenty of rain or drought, plenty to eat or famine, an abundant harvest or a bad harvest, security or peril, sickness or health. It also includes such occupations as computing, accounting, calculating, poetry, and cosmology. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes making arrangements for giving and taking in marriage, for engagement and divorce, and for scattering rice inwards or outwards at the wedding ceremony. It also includes casting spells for good or bad luck, curses to prevent conception, bind the tongue or lock the jaws, charms for the hands and ears, questioning a mirror, a girl, or a god as an oracle, worshipping the sun, worshipping the Great One, breathing fire, and invoking Siri, the goddess of luck. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes rites for propitiation, for granting wishes, for ghosts, for the earth, for rain, for property settlement, and for preparing and consecrating house sites, and rites involving rinsing and bathing, and oblations. It also includes administering emetics, purgatives, expectorants, and phlemagogues, administering ear oils, eye restoratives, nasal medicine, ointments, and counter-ointments, surgery with needle and scalpel, treating children, prescribing root medicines, and binding on herbs. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. A mendicant thus accomplished in ethics sees no danger in any quarter in regards to their ethical restraint. It's like a king who has defeated his enemies. He sees no danger from his foes in any quarter. In the same way, a mendicant thus accomplished in ethics sees no danger in any quarter in regards to their ethical restraint. When they have this entire spectrum of noble ethics, they experience a blameless happiness inside themselves. That's how a mendicant is accomplished in ethics. And how does a mendicant guard the sense doors? When a noble disciple sees a sight with their eyes, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of sight were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of sight and achieving its restraint. When they hear a sound with their ears, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of hearing were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of hearing and achieving its restraint. When they smell an odour with their nose, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of smell were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of smell and achieving its restraint. When they taste a flavour with their tongue, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of taste were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of taste and achieving its restraint. When they feel a touch with their body, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of touch were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of touch and achieving its restraint. When they know a thought with their mind, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of mind were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of mind and achieving its restraint. When they have this noble sense restraint, they experience an unsullied bliss inside themselves. That's how a mendicant guards the sense doors. And how does a mendicant have mindfulness and situational awareness? It's when a mendicant acts with situational awareness, when going out and coming back, when looking ahead and aside, when bending and extending the limbs, when bearing the outer robe, bowl and robes, when eating, drinking, chewing and tasting, when urinating and defecating, when walking, standing, sitting, sleeping, waking, speaking and keeping silent. That's how a mendicant has mindfulness and situational awareness. And how is a mendicant content? It's when a mendicant is content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. They're like a bird. Wherever it flies, wings are its only burden. In the same way, a mendicant is content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. That's how a mendicant is content. When they have this noble spectrum of ethics, this noble sense restraint, this noble mindfulness and situational awareness, and this noble contentment, they frequent a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. After the meal, they return from arms round, sit down cross-legged with their body straight, and establish mindfulness right there. Giving up desire for the world, they meditate with the heart rid of desire, cleansing the mind of desire. Giving up ill will and malevolence, they meditate with a mind rid of ill will, full of compassion for all living beings, cleansing the mind of ill will. Giving up dullness and drowsiness, they meditate with a mind rid of dullness and drowsiness, perceiving light, mindful and aware, cleansing the mind of dullness and drowsiness. Giving up restlessness and remorse, they meditate without restlessness, their mind peaceful inside, cleansing the mind of restlessness and remorse. Giving up doubt, they meditate having gone beyond doubt, not undecided about skillful qualities, cleansing the mind of doubt. Suppose a man who has gotten into debt were to apply himself to work and his efforts proved successful. He would pay off the original loan and have enough left over to support his partner. Thinking about this, he'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose there was a person who was sick, suffering, gravely ill. They'd lose their appetite and get physically weak. But after some time, they'd recover from that illness and regain their appetite and their strength. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose a person was imprisoned in a jail, but after some time they were released from jail, safe and sound, with no loss of wealth. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose a person was a bond servant. They belonged to someone else and were unable to go where they wish. But after some time they'd be freed from servitude and become their own master, an emancipated individual able to go where they wish. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose there was a person with wealth and property who was travelling along a desert road which was perilous, with nothing to eat. But after some time they crossed over the desert safely, reaching the neighbourhood of a village, a sanctuary free of peril. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. In the same way, as long as these five hindrances are not given up inside themselves, a mendicant regards them thus as a debt, a disease, a prison, slavery, and a desert crossing. But when these five hindrances are given up inside themselves, a mendicant regards this as freedom from debt, good health, release from prison, emancipation, and sanctuary. Seeing that the hindrances have been given up in them, joy springs up. Being joyful, rapture springs up. When the mind is full of rapture, the body becomes tranquil. When the body is tranquil, they feel bliss. And when blissful, the mind becomes immersed. Quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, they enter and remain in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion while placing the mind and keeping it connected. They drench, steep, fill, and spread their body with rapture and bliss born of seclusion. There's no part of the body that's not spread with rapture and bliss born of seclusion. It's like when a deft bathroom attendant or their apprentice pours bath powder into a bronze dish, sprinkling it little by little with water. They knead it until the ball of bath powder is soaked and saturated with moisture, spread through inside and out, yet no moisture oozes out. In the same way, a mendicant drenches, steeps, fills, and spreads their body with rapture and bliss born of seclusion. There's no part of the body that's not spread with rapture and bliss born of seclusion. This pertains to their accomplishment in mind. Furthermore, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, a mendicant enters and remains in the second absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of immersion, with internal clarity and confidence and unified mind, without applying the mind and keeping it connected. In the same way, a mendicant drenches, steeps, fills, and spreads their body with rapture and bliss born of immersion. There's no part of the body that's not spread with rapture and bliss born of immersion. It's like a deep lake fed by spring water. There's no inlet to the east, west, north, or south, and no rainfall to replenish it from time to time. But the stream of cool water welling up in the lake drenches, steeps, fills, and spreads throughout the lake. There's no part of the lake that's not spread through with cool water. In the same way, a mendicant drenches, steeps, fills, and spreads their body with rapture and bliss born of immersion. There's no part of the body that's not spread with rapture and bliss born of immersion. This pertains to their accomplishment in mind. Furthermore, with the fading away of rapture, a mendicant enters and remains in the third absorption, where they meditate with equanimity, mindful and aware, personally experiencing the bliss of which the noble ones declare, "Equanimous and mindful, one meditates in bliss." They drench, steep, fill, and spread their body with bliss free of rapture. There's no part of the body that's not spread with bliss free of rapture. It's like a pool with blue water lilies or pink or white lotuses. Some of them sprout and grow in the water without rising above it, thriving underwater. From the tip to the root they're drenched, steeped, filled and soaked with cool water. There's no part of them that's not soaked with cool water. In the same way, a mendicant drenches, steeps, fills and spreads their body with bliss free of rapture. There's no part of the body that's not spread with bliss free of rapture. This pertains to their accomplishment in mind. Furthermore, giving up pleasure and pain, and ending former happiness and sadness, a mendicant enters and remains in the fourth absorption, without pleasure or pain, with pure equanimity and mindfulness. It's like someone sitting wrapped from head to foot with white cloth. There's no part of the body that's not spread over with white cloth. In the same way, they sit spreading their body through with pure, bright mind. There's no part of the body that's not spread with pure, bright mind. This pertains to their accomplishment in mind. This, Kasapa, is that accomplishment in mind. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge and vision. They understand, this body of mine is physical. It's made up of the four primary elements produced by mother and father, built up from rice and porridge, liable to impermanence, to wearing away and erosion, to breaking up and destruction. And this consciousness of mine is attached to it, tied to it. Suppose there was a beryl gem that was naturally beautiful, eight-faceted, well-worked, transparent, clear and unclouded, endowed with all good qualities. And it was strung with a thread of blue, yellow, red, white, or golden brown. And someone with good eyesight were to take it in their hand and check it. This beryl gem is naturally beautiful, eight-faceted, well-worked, transparent, clear and unclouded, endowed with all good qualities, and it's strung with a thread of blue, yellow, red, white, or golden brown. In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge and vision. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward the creation of a mind-made body. From this body they create another body, physical, mind-made, complete in all its various parts, not deficient in any faculty. Suppose a person was to draw a reed out from its sheath. They'd think, this is the reed, This is the sheath. The reed and the sheath are different things. The reed has been drawn out from the sheath. Or suppose a person was to draw a sword out from its scabbard. They'd think, this is the sword, this is the scabbard. The sword and the scabbard are different things. The sword has been drawn out from the scabbard. Or suppose a person was to draw a snake out from its slough. They'd think, this is the snake, this is the slough. The snake and the slough are different things. The snake has been drawn out from the slough. In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward the creation of a mind-made body. From this body they create another body, physical, mind-made, complete in all its various parts, not deficient in any faculty. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward psychic power. They wield the many kinds of psychic power, multiplying themselves and becoming one again, going unimpeded through a wall, a rampart, or a mountain as if through space, diving in and out of the earth as if it were water, walking on water as if it were earth, flying cross-legged through the sky like a bird, touching and stroking with the hand the sun and moon, so mighty and powerful, controlling the body as far as the Brahma realm. Suppose an expert potter or their apprentice had some well-prepared clay. They could produce any kind of pot that they like. Or suppose a deft ivory carver or their apprentice had some well-prepared ivory. They could produce any kind of ivory item that they like. Or suppose a deft goldsmith or their apprentice had some well-prepared gold. They could produce any kind of gold item that they like. In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward psychic power. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward clairaudience. With clairaudience that is purified and superhuman, they hear both kinds of sounds, human and divine, whether near or far. Suppose there was a person travelling along the road. They'd hear the sound of drums, clay drums, horns, kettle drums, and tom-toms. They'd think, that's the sound of drums, and that's the sound of clay drums, and that's the sound of horns, kettle drums, and tom-toms. In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward clairaudience. With clairaudience that is purified and superhuman, they hear both kinds of sounds, human and divine, whether near or far. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward comprehending the minds of others. They understand the minds of other beings and individuals, having comprehended them with their own mind. They understand mind with greed as mind with greed, and mind without greed as mind without greed. They understand mind with hate as mind with hate, and mind without hate as mind without hate. They understand mind with delusion as mind with delusion, and mind without delusion as mind without delusion. They understand constricted mind as constricted mind, and scattered mind as scattered mind. They understand expansive mind as expansive mind, and unexpansive mind as unexpansive mind. They understand mind that is not supreme as mind that is not supreme, and mind that is supreme as mind that is supreme. They understand immersed mind as immersed mind, and unimmersed mind as unimmersed mind. They understand freed mind as freed mind, and unfreed mind as unfreed mind. Suppose there was a woman or man who was young, youthful, and fond of adornments, and they check their own reflection in a clean, bright mirror or a clear bowl of water. If they had a spot, they'd know, I have a spot. And if they had no spots, they'd know, I have no spots. In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward comprehending the minds of others. They understand the minds of other beings and individuals, having comprehended them with their own mind. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward recollection of past lives. They recollect many kinds of past lives, that is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000 rebirths, many eons of the world contracting, many eons of the world expanding, many eons of the world contracting and expanding. They remember, there I was named this, my clan was that, I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn somewhere else. There too I was named this, my clan was that, I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn here. And so they recollect their many kinds of past lives with features and details. Suppose a person was to leave their home village and go to another village. From that village they'd go to yet another village, and from that village they'd return to their home village. They'd think, I went from my home village to another village. There I stood like this, sat like that, spoke like this, or kept silent like that. From that village I went to yet another village. There too I stood like this, sat like that, spoke like this, or kept silent like that. And from that village I returned to my home village. In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward recollection of past lives. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge of the death and rebirth of sentient beings. With clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, they see sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. They understand how sentient beings are reborn according to their deeds. These dear beings did bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. They spoke ill of the noble ones, they had wrong view, and they acted out of that wrong view. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. These dear beings, however, did good things by way of body, speech, and mind. They never spoke ill of the noble ones. They had right view, and they acted out of that right view. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. and so, with clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, they see sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. They understand how sentient beings are reborn according to their deeds. Suppose there was a stilt longhouse at the central square. A person with good eyesight standing there might see people entering and leaving a house, walking along the streets and paths, and sitting at the central square. They'd think, "These are people entering and leaving a house, walking along the streets and paths, and sitting at the central square." In the same way, when their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge of the death and rebirth of sentient beings. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge of the ending of defilements. They truly understand, this is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of suffering. They truly understand, these are defilements. This is the origin of defilements. This is the cessation of defilements. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of defilements. Knowing and seeing like this, their mind is freed from the defilements of sensuality, desire to be reborn, and ignorance. When they're freed, they know they're freed. They understand, rebirth is ended, the spiritual journey has been completed, what had to be done has been done, there is no return to any state of existence. This pertains to their accomplishment in wisdom. This, Kassapa, is that accomplishment in wisdom. And, Kassapa, there is no accomplishment in ethics, mind, and wisdom that is better or finer than this. There are, Kassapa, some ascetics and Brahmins who teach ethics. They praise ethical conduct in many ways. But as far as the highest noble ethics goes, I don't see anyone who's my equal, still less my superior. Rather, I am the one who is superior when it comes to the higher ethics. There are, Kassapa, some ascetics and Brahmins who teach mortification in disgust of sin. They praise mortification in disgust of sin in many ways. But as far as the highest noble mortification in disgust of sin goes, I don't see anyone who's my equal, still less my superior. Rather, I am the one who is superior when it comes to the higher mortification in disgust of sin. There are, Kassapa, some ascetics and Brahmins who teach wisdom. They praise wisdom in many ways. But as far as the highest noble wisdom goes, I don't see anyone who's my equal, still less my superior. Rather, I am the one who is superior when it comes to the higher wisdom. There are, Kassapa, some ascetics and Brahmins who teach freedom. They praise freedom in many ways. But as far as the highest noble freedom goes, I don't see anyone who's my equal, still less my superior. Rather, I am the one who is superior when it comes to the higher freedom. It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, the ascetic Gotama only roars his lion's roar in an empty hut, not in an assembly. They should be told, not so. What should be said is this. The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar, and he roars it in an assembly. It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, the ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar, and he roars it in an assembly. But he doesn't roar it boldly. They should be told, not so. What should be said is this. The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar, he roars it in an assembly, and he roars it boldly. It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, the ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar, he roars it in an assembly, and he roars it boldly. But they don't question him. They should be told, not so. What should be said is this. The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly, and they question him. It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him." But he doesn't answer their questions. They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him, and he answers their questions." It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions." But his answers are not satisfactory. They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions, and his answers are satisfactory." It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. But he is not worth listening to." They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory, and they think him worth listening to." It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. He is worth listening to." But they are not confident after listening. They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. They think him worth listening to, and they're confident after listening." It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. He is worth listening to. They're confident after listening." But they don't show their confidence. They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. They think him worth listening to. They're confident after listening, and they show their confidence." It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. He is worth listening to. They're confident after listening. They show their confidence." But they don't practice accordingly. They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. They think him worth listening to. They're confident after listening. They show their confidence, and they practice accordingly." It's possible that wanderers who follow other paths might say, "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. He is worth listening to. They're confident after listening. They show their confidence. They practice accordingly." But they don't succeed in their practice. They should be told, "Not so." What should be said is this: "The ascetic Gotama roars his lion's roar. He roars it in an assembly. He roars it boldly. They question him. He answers their questions. His answers are satisfactory. They think him worth listening to. They're confident after listening. They show their confidence. They practice accordingly, and they succeed in their practice." Kassapa, This one time I was staying near Rajagaha on the Vulture's Peak Mountain. There a certain practitioner of self-mortification, named Nigrodha, asked me about the higher mortification in disgust of sin. I answered his question. He was extremely happy with my answer. Sir, who wouldn't be extremely happy after hearing the Buddha's teaching? For I too am extremely happy after hearing the Buddha's teaching. Excellent, sir, excellent. As if he were righting the overturned, or revealing the hidden, or pointing out the path to the lost, or lighting a lamp in the dark so people with good eyes can see what's there, so too the Buddha has made the teaching clear in many ways. I go for refuge to the Buddha, to the teaching, and to the mendicant Sangha. Sir, may I receive the going forth, the ordination in the Buddha's presence. Kassapa, if someone formally ordained in another sect wishes to take the going forth, the ordination in this teaching and training, they must spend 4 months on probation. When 4 months have passed, if the mendicants are satisfied, they'll give the going forth, the ordination into monkhood. However, I have recognized individual differences in this matter. Sir, if 4 months probation are required in such a case, I'll spend 4 years on probation. When 4 years have passed, if the mendicants are satisfied, let them give me the going forth, the ordination into monkhood. And the naked ascetic Kassapa received the going forth, the ordination in the Buddha's presence. Not long after his ordination, Venerable Kassapa, living alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen, and resolute, soon realized the supreme end of the spiritual path in this very life. He lived, having achieved with his own insight the goal for which gentlemen rightly go forth from the lay life to homelessness. He understood, rebirth is ended, the spiritual journey has been completed, what had to be done has been done, there is no return to any state of existence. And Venerable Kassapa became one of the perfected.